Okay, folks, welcome to Dojo Talks. Today we are recapping the 2024 FIDE candidates, which just ended yesterday. We're basically like, I don't know, a couple of hours away since the tournament ended. And I'm just going to spoil the result. We had what I would say is a surprise winner in Gukesh, the 17-year-old from India. There were a few people picking him before the tournament, but I think him winning was definitely a sensation. He's the youngest ever candidate for the World Championship, and he's now going to face Ding Liren, presumably in November of this year, in the FIDE World Championship match. And if he wins that match, then he will be the youngest ever chess world champion. So already quite a feat to even qualify. And I mean, what a tournament, guys. Where do we even start with it? My first question for you all is, how do you rank this Canada's tournament compared to the other recent ones we've had?
Better, higher, the highest.
Good, yeah.
yeah. It wins on the quality of the chess. It wins on a degree of excitement. It wins on the winner.
I guess I'd call it like a watershed moment, and I'll talk more about why. But I think the comparable one for me is when Magnus won the candidates and it was like down to the wire. No one knew what was going on, dude. Kramnik looked like he was walking away with it. And that was also a watershed moment because that really ushered in the period of Magnus and Magnus being world champion, which is now over, unless I have some words for Magnus. Maybe he'll come back. But that was this period, right, that I feel started then. And then this is another amazing tournament. And it's also this watershed moment. We'll talk about why, at least I think, chess history is now a little bit different. Like we're entering a new era now with this tournament. But in terms of excitement, oh, dude, and chess, this one was amazing. You know, I'm sure we'll talk more about that, too.
Yeah, it felt like people were very engaged. I mean, we were all basically glued to our seats. As David posted on Twitter, like our plan, literally day before the candidates was like, okay, we'll try to trade off, try to cover some of it. Mm-hmm. And I think for all of us, it was just, it became like must-watch television. And I'm with Jesse. I think it was basically as compelling as 2013, which I thought was a great candidates with Magnus, Aronian, Kramnik, all just kind of, gunning for it. And it was super fun to watch. It made me think a lot about the current state of chess tournaments and why this tournament was in fact so compelling compared to other super tournaments. Basically, I think it just comes down to the stakes of the event. First place was all that matters. Yeah. I mean, just a treat to follow. And it was very tight until the absolute last second. That final game with Fabio Nepo. I mean, it just seemed completely like it could go either way. You know, and it was unclear if we were going to get a tiebreak or not. So it was just incredibly dramatic, and it didn't feel like it was like David said, it was good quality chess, so it didn't feel like, oh, there's all these blunders and the results were totally random. I don't think so at all. I think people played actually quite well given the pressure of the event. Mm-hmm. Obviously the last game with Fabio Nepo, I mean, Fabi in his words, you know, played very badly, but still, you know, we've always seen how resourceful Nepo can be in his defense. So
That's by Fabi's super high standards, you know, in the moment as he's being shown computer variations, which I think the computer variations just make everybody feel bad, you know, and they made him feel bad. Like he's looking at the computer variation and the computer in 1 second is telling him everything he's done wrong. But me watching it, I thought he played phenomenally. Like that rookie four move that he played, I mean, and all of this, you know, off a 30-second increment, basically. I thought he played great.
Mm-hmm. I thought he played very well up until, let's say, like move 35. And then, I mean, you know, obviously he's an amazing player, but like, I don't know. I feel like he's a correct judge of his own play. You know? I think he definitely could have. He shouldn't have even gotten into that position where he's like up in exchange and it's tricky. Like, that should have just not happened. And then I would say after the time control, it was just impossibly difficult. Like, with the time pressure and the complexity of the position, I think that was wild. So that was very funny. I was watching the live broadcast at that point, and it's just like, you know, I mean, the engine is basically leading them astray. It's like showing them all these ideas, and their players are just making almost like random moves, you know, according to the engine, and the bar is just swinging up and down. But it was so realistic because it was such a complicated position. That's exactly what you would expect.
And it was like, oh, here you had maiden 26, but like, you didn't find it. Like, literally, it was maiden 26. I mean, okay.
So, Kostya, speaking about time pressure, I wonder if you're interested in doing a take back. So, the beginning of the tournament, you were very persuasive that FIDE had done a terrible thing about not having increment for the first time control. And yeah, you had a persuasive argument, and I think I was, you know, I was along for your ride. But now, in hindsight, you got to say, man, oh, we had some interesting moments on the clock. And for the fans, yeah, it definitely added to the excitement that there was no increment.
Well, okay, it for sure did add to the excitement. But yeah, I wasn't a fan of FIDE's thing. Because to me, it feels very sneaky. It's like, okay, how do we fix classical chess? Step one. We get everyone used to the 30-second increment. Every major tournament, we use the 30-second increment. Step two, when it comes down to the candidates, like the most important event of the past 2 years, we get rid of the increment, and we just leave it up to the players. And lo and behold, it's not that they're flagging. I don't know if we even saw like a flag or maybe one flag, but it's that the pressure gets to them, and they don't really feel like how much time they have, and then, you know, they just end up. We saw more blunders in that phase of the game. Which,
so I'm just saying, of course, all your arguments are sound, but in terms of watching it as a fan, I mean, it was like, oh, wow. You know, oh my God, Ali Reis has got 4 seconds left. You know, it was like that. It's like, wow, this is amazing. This is crack. This is beautiful.
Yeah, I think it was fun to watch for sure. I would just say that they just need to pick a time control for their classical events and stick with it. And if they want to pick one where there's no increment before move 40, but then that becomes the new standard. I wouldn't like that as a player, but if they want to do that, at least that would be rational. That would be a rational choice.
Yeah.
At least you'd be used to it, and then you'd be fine. Like, I had to adjust to the 30-second increment. At first, that was weird to me, that I'm not allowed to choose how to divide up my own time, or that if you get somebody in, like, terrible pressure that they can then perhaps dig out of it and then have time to think again instead of having to play the rest of the game as like a blitz. You have to adjust to it. But whatever you adjust to, I mean, yeah, stick with it.
Yeah. And I definitely want to say, as a player, you know, obviously I'm not going to be playing for the World Championship anytime soon, but as a player, I want there to be I want it to be standardized, you know? I have some, obviously every player has a feeling about what should be standardized, but it's not good to be having all these different time controls. And every tournament you go to, it's a different time control. I mean, obviously, right? So what's weird about that statement, of course, is as a fan, I was really into the no increment, man. That was fun, man. It brought me back to the old days with the analog clocks. You didn't know how much time was left, man. And you're slapping that clock trying to make the other guy's flag fall.
Horrible. Horrible. Yeah. So we're in agreement that there should be a standardization on that.
Right. But yeah, wild candidates, good chess overall.
Yeah.
Definitely heartbreaking game between Fabi and Nepo. You know, I was certainly rooting for at least one of the Americans to make it. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to root against Gukesh. I mean, he's kind of unimpeachable. It's just really exciting challenger. And what I noticed is that after the candidates, he's now higher rated than Ding Liren by a point, FIDE point, which is...
So he's the favorite.
He shot up in rating. He shot up. He's in the top 10 now and yada, yada. Yep.
Yeah. It was coming at some point. I just thought, you know, there was a good chance it was another 3 months away.
Mm-hmm.
It came so fast.
So fast.
It came so fast. Because yesterday on the broadcast, like, we were talking about his head-to-head with Fabi in case of a potential tiebreak, right? And, like, oh, how has he done in, like, blitz or rapid games against Fabi in the past? What would a head-to-head look like? And I was like, wait a minute. These games are from 2023 where he played Fabi. He's way better than he was in 2023, right? Like, that's irrelevant. Yeah. He was 16 years old. like, at his... For us, that would be like the latest stuff in our chess development, right? Would be like, oh, stuff we were doing in 2023. And for him, it's like old. Yeah. It has nothing to do with how he would have performed in a potential tiebreak today against Fabi.
Yeah.
He's just a different player. Mm-hmm. And Ghosty and I, you know, were saying like, oh, yeah, he's like different than he was at Prague Masters 1 month ago. You know, he's already a new player.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's scary to think where he's going to be at in 6 months in November when he plays Ding. Because from what I heard from the interviews, he's you know, super pumped for the match. And he's in particular excited about prepping for the match. So he already has like the right mindset. He's like, I'm going to enjoy the process. It's like, oh my God.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing you can do against somebody with that attitude.
No, he's like just an accelerating meteor that's just going to come for Ding. Interestingly, I saw Ding actually made a statement. He said something about how I forgot exactly what he said, but basically he's looking forward to playing the match against Gukesh.
And so he's good. The superior player.
Yeah, actually that was weird. I think people were trying to interpret that. I think what he meant is that he has the better record in classical, because he said something like, I have the advantage in classical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he meant like his record. Which, again, with a past Gukesh, you know, that Gukesh is long gone. We have a new Gukesh now.
Yeah. I mean, Ding kind of like retired from chess before the current Gukesh existed.
Well, that's strong. David, he hasn't had good results. But
let me push back a little bit on the inevitability thing about Gukesh for a second.
Yeah.
But I love the story. I love the storyline of Gukesh. But let me just push back for a second. So, a couple years ago, it looked like the inevitable one was Ali Reza. And one of the definite storylines of the tournament is Ali Reza's complete collapse, right? And it's really interesting to think about, like, you're a young kid and all of a sudden you're getting all this media attention, right? And then Ali Reza goes to Paris, terrible place for a kid to be, starts getting into fashion, distracted from the game. And one of the beautiful things about Gukesh is he was living in this little, he's got this little room at his house. There's a great YouTube video by Shagar Shah, Chess Space India, about, you know, his just little training monastic routine. It's so great. But now Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister of India, is like congratulating him. All these, he's instantly this public figure. All kinds of people want to talk to him. All kinds of powerful people want to talk to him. And so, like Ali Reza, I think this is the chance to fall, right? Now, by the way, I don't know if Ali Reza is completely out. I kind of hope he refines himself, rediscovers himself, totally possible. Fischer rediscovered himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a player and as a person. And then, well, we didn't want to talk about the person part. Anyways, you know, so this is in a dangerous moment. At 17, it's kind of hard to even think about, because with that beard and the mustache, he looks like he's 30, right? But he's actually just 17, you know? Is he going to meet some girls now? Oh, yeah, he's going to meet some girls, dude. He's going to have all kinds of influences on him. All kinds of stuff is headed this kid's way. So can he retain that monastic lifestyle? Or maybe a better question is, how long can he retain it? Because it's impossible to retain forever. And that's the beauty of being 17 and playing chess. Like, you can get in that zone, and you're just completely committed and loving the game. But there's outside influences, as we saw with Ali Reza, and it can all fall apart. And so that's just one of the things I want to throw out there. As you know, I don't know how inevitable it is. So I want it to be like David's dream is expressing.
Sure. I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, if you look back, I mean, he's gone so far so fast, right? And so far, he's got a great attitude. So there's no reason to think that he's steps before the fall or before the collapse. So I don't think that anything's inevitable. in life, really.
Right.
You know, and it's good for us to not to take any of our predictions or conclusions too seriously. They're all like, it's a chance. It's an idea. It's something that could be.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, you would think that him continuing to enjoy chess and improve for the rest of 2024 would be more likely than him now collapsing and, you know, running around, going to parties and being followed by photographers and the pressure getting too much and, you know, downward drug spiral, blah, blah, blah. You know, like that seems like much less likely than that he continues as somebody who's really pumped about chess and is going to enjoy a really good year of playing chess.
Right. Right. No, I just wanted to put in the human context. The kid's got he's got a wave coming at him now. He's got a big old wave hitting him right in the face right now. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it will be tough, and he is quite young, but super exciting to see how good he's gonna get. And from Ding's point of view, I mean, I think it would be great to see Ding recover to like his previous form, like his 2018, 2019 100 game unbeaten streak. I think if we see that, then the match is surely just gonna be very, very interesting and super competitive. If he continues in the form we've seen since the last World Championship, then to me it feels like, and Gukesh continues on his trajectory, then it just feels like Gukesh is just a heavy favorite in the match, just based on how they've played.
And I'm sure we'll talk more about that upcoming match, but like we're talking about just in the thing of people rediscovering themselves, like what's going on? No one knows what's going on with Ding. He's barely playing. His results have been terrible. And that guy was also had an air of inevitability about him. When I remember, I would say 2015, people started becoming aware of him. It was like, oh no, this kid is on fire. No one's going to touch this kid. And until his bike accident, it seemed like that was inevitability there too, you know? So there's definitely some drama that he's so closed down. It's hard for me to read what's exactly going on in his life. But, you know, definitely big question marks there. He could totally recover and crush Gukesh. I think that's totally possible, but he must recover in some way.
It's unlikely, because I would say even if he recovered, it's not clear he would be better than Gukesh in 6 months, right? So even if he did like a full recovery in the next 6 months, like this kid's no joke, right? This kid just surpassed, you know, at least for 2 weeks, Bobby, who is no joke, right? And Nepo, who's just an absolute beast at these tournaments, right? And I think it is the natural next question or topic for us to ask is kind of, where's Gukesh going? So A, is he going to win the world championship? And then like B, you know, how high do you see him going in terms of, you know, his rating or his career or anything like that is reasonable to speculate on. Despite, you know, in general, we don't like to put pressure on kids by talking too much up, you know, the pressure on them. Might have been something that hurt Faruja, but I think it's the natural next topic. So do you guys do we all see him winning the world championship match?
80% chance. 80%.
Oh, 80%. Yeah. Wow. I'd be closer to 50-50 for the match.
Wow. Okay.
But with Gukesh as right now, I would definitely put my money on him. Maybe 60-40 for Gukesh. But yeah, I think it's not just him. It's like Noderbeck, Eric Geisy, and Gukesh are now like world number 4, 5, and 6. So they're all kind of arriving, which is very exciting. They're all like just, and they're doing it in like different ways. Noderbeck, you know, he won the Prague tournament, and Eric Geisy just been winning like every single open. And now Gukesh, obviously, it's just, and what's cool is this year, a lot of the kids, I think all three of them are playing the Grand Chess Tour. I think Keimer's playing Grand Chess Tour, so they're just going to get a bunch more of like super events based on that. And yeah, I think they're all just gunning for right now. I think it's the number 2 spot, but soon it'll be the number 1 spot. Like, we're really not that far away.
I'm very leery of making dramatic predictions, right? Of like, you know, 80-90% chance of somebody winning something. Because normally once you perceive a favorite, it makes you sort of exaggerate how much they're a favorite just because you see, because you found the reason why they are the favorite. And then if the reason why they're the favorite is pretty obvious, like Gukesh is in good form, plus Ding's in bad form. Like, it's not like you like sat there like comparing 20 different factors, right? You're just like, he's playing well, he's playing badly. You know, then you just want to like swing to something huge. And yesterday on stream, when we were talking about the potential Fabi versus Gukesh playoff, some people were just enraged and thought I was completely biased and hated the United States because I said that Fabi only had a 55-45 advantage against Gukesh in a playoff.
Mm.
Right? So it's like, I can perceive that Fabi might be a favorite, but I think it's very close to equal. It's like you have to really like look and think to see the difference. So I'm not one to make huge predictions. The fact that it's 6 months away reduces the chance, right? Like if the world championship match were next month, then it would be like 95% Gukesh. Like there's just time and no reason why the forms could change that fast.
Mm.
You know, 6 months away, there's some room for something, but I think I'm still with Jesse. Like I'm going to make one of the more dramatic numbers I would ever assign to something. I think he's a favorite, like Magnus versus Nepo, you know, like really, I think Magnus versus Nepo, I even said 85 to 90% for Magnus.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's just that there's so much uncertainty around Ding, you can't be totally sure, but at least 80% chance to Gukesh for me.
But, you know, also I want to say about this, when we think back to what Chess Numbers did in his prediction with Magnus versus Nepo, that it was like a 100-point rating difference, and that 100-point rating difference over so many games really tells when you start doing a statistical analysis. And then if you think then about this one, right now, technically they're tied, but Gukesh is so young that you have to take his results from like the past 3 months. And in that 3 months, he's playing 2,800 plus chess, my friend. So there's already, I would say, a rating difference between them. And Ding's rating has been collapsing. So if you take his last year or something, I mean, there's a 100-point difference right there.
Yeah.
Okay, can I do my can I do why I think this was a watershed moment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Brand time.
Just bring down camera number two over here. So there's three reasons I think this is a watershed tournament. Number one, classical chess is not dead. Classical chess is doing fine. It was amazing. We had so much interest in this event. So Magnus, just admit it, boss. You were wrong. We're not playing no rapid or nothing, any crazy monkey bunky stuff. Classical chess is doing great. Number two, got to talk about the rise of the Indians. And it's not just Indians in India, but like here in the United States. So it's just that this tournament, these Indian kids are on fire. And the way I think about it is this. Like in the old Soviet times, when you think about not just Russia, but all the Soviet states like Armenia, Ukraine, they had all of this chess culture going on. And so every kid from an early age had a chance to try out their talent. And from that talent was created like just an unbelievable growth of chess beauty and strength. That is going on in India now, and we're seeing the first results of it. Okay. But it's a much bigger population. It's just a much bigger population. And this Gukesh thing is just adding more fuel to that fire. So you see it here in the United States too. There's a huge Indian population here and the parents are pushing it. They're pushing it hard. And these kids, some of them are just amazing results. So I think before the tournament, people were saying, yeah, the Indians are good, but they're not ready. No, they're already ready and there's gonna be more of them. Next time around, I imagine the field to be almost entirely Indian. That's how strong I think this wave is right now. Okay, point number three, why I think this is a watershed moment. What Gukesh showed to me is that computer chess is changing the top level. And so it's like this. Before, I think the computer was like showing you an interesting idea and you'd be like, okay, I get that. I can use that idea. Now, it's like taking people down these darker avenues that it's harder for the older generation, like Fabi and the rest, to understand. But for the younger generation, Gukesh, who've grown up with the new supercomputers, there's a new kind of thinking going on. And it's hard for an old timer like me to even appreciate it. But I'll point us to just one experience as an anecdote. We were looking at, all watching his game with the Abasov, and he played this move h6, and Prus, Kostya, and me were like, ah, this can't be good. And I was like trying to make it work, and I couldn't make it work. But then afterwards, I sat down with the Stockfish 16.1, and I was looking at it, and it was like, Gukesh is fine the whole way through. The whole way through. So our old-timer view of that position was simply wrong, and I'm pretty sure that, like, Fabi and Nepo would have had a similar reaction to the way we did. It seemed gross, but it was very workable, and Gukesh knew how to do it. In the press conference, too, he was like, I could have played this. I could have played this. It was okay. You know, so that's like a new approach to chess that's happening right now. And it's hard to appreciate because it's something that's hard to understand. All right, there it is. There's my ramp of why I thought this was the watershed tournament for a long time.
Okay. Well, all right. So you had 3 points there. You had classical chess is not dead. You had the Indians are coming, and computers have changed top level chess. We should probably take these one at a
time. A lot. Yeah. And that it's the young generation that understands it, and the older generation simply can't remold their brains to fight on that playing field evenly.
Yeah, no neuroplasticity. Okay, so on the classical chess is dead part, for me what stuck out is that, like, this is the first tournament that I started truly caring about in a while, maybe even since, like, the last candidates or the last World Cup. So what that signifies to me is not that classical chess is very much alive, but that classical chess has a problem when, like, 90% of the super tournaments aren't compelling, like the candidates was.
Mm-hmm.
I saw, actually, Greg Shahadi, he posted a tweet, and I think me and David were talking about this on the broadcast the other day, that, like, there should just be no more rating qualification. If you want to win the candidates, you got to qualify by, like, winning a tournament. So basically, create more tournaments where there's a lot at stake and where first place matters way more than everything else. And then every tournament starts to become incredibly exciting as people try and break into the candidates. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think I like the idea of the FIDE circuit. That's kind of a separate thing. But yeah, to me, clearly there's still a lot of fight left in classical chess. We saw a ton of new opening ideas. And when players want to play for a win with white or with black, like, we see that they can definitely do it at any level. But yeah, I feel like for me, it's more of a problem with how the tournaments are structured. Everyone gets paid 1 through 10. You're incentivized to keep your rating, to keep getting invites versus fighting for first place in some random tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Sinkfield Cups of the world, the random round robins have become stale and boring.
As Magnus has said.
Yeah.
And the way for Magnus, if you want it to be exciting, boss, you need to get back into the candidates. You have to qualify for the candidates and then play in the candidates. That's how you can make chess exciting.
I mean, he could also throw his weight around to create more exciting tournaments because he's a big draw and he can vote with where he goes and what he supports and where he directs sponsors for what tournament structures look like, right? Like the Magnus chess tour is molded by Magnus's idea, right? And this freestyle chess tour that's starting up is molded by Magnus's idea.
Mm-hmm.
So if Magnus got on board with stuff like, you know, everybody in the candidates should have to win a tournament to get there, let's stop having, you know, rating spots and this and that and the other place, then that would be another way for him to really contribute to Kostya's vision of the chess world.
Mm-hmm.
And saving classical along the way. Or whatever, making chess more better. Yeah.
And actually, you guys probably want to respond to the other garbage I was saying, but I just want to add, as a player at the lower levels, like, we used to have the way the U.S. Championship used to work is we would have all these qualifying tournaments, and there was drama as a player too, as not just as a fan, but as a player. It's like,
oh yeah,
oh, I'm not just playing for some rating thing or whatever. I'm playing to advance. I got to get this spot. Fantastic. Yeah, yeah, we need more of that.
Yeah, that was real, like, proof in reality, in action. Because sometimes you got a great idea, you know, and you write some post on Twitter like, hey, everybody, this is how it should be. And you're like, yeah, I sound like a genius, you know?
Yeah.
But it may or may not actually work out. But we have that evidence that when the U.S. championship field was set based on these all those qualifiers, it was a great period in American chess.
Yeah,
it was a great period. All those tournaments, every tournament that was leading to the U.S. Championship was made better by it, and the U.S. Championship was made better by it.
Right. And so basically, I think to put Kostya's vision in a nutshell, like, these tournaments need to have some significant role in determining who gets to be in the next candidate's tournament, right? And it would, so no more just dumb round robins for rating, you know? Let's have something at stake, and let's have the winner actually, like, win something.
Yeah. Jesse, when you give your little speeches, they seem so sacred, I'm afraid to even argue with anything.
Poke at it.
Like, it's disrespectful to even answer you.
Poke at it, my friend, poke at it.
But I'll be the grouchy guy yelling at the clouds, as often is the case, and say, I saw a lot of excitement and hope for classical chess at this event. Yes. But I would still like chess 960 over this, despite the fresh opening ideas, despite the fresh play of Vidit and Prague and Gukesh, you know, despite the Petrov not being a death knell for the game, despite some nice end games being played for once instead of people, you know, having no time and just doing whatever once it gets to the end game. Despite all the good things and how exciting it was and how riveted I was to the whole thing, I still feel like there are some limits to classical chess, and we had the most decisive games ever, but let me just draw your eyes or your attention to one stat pointed out by Drittman. Among the top four players who were in the running for the candidate spot in the last round, Nepo, Naka, Caruana, and Ding, and Gukesh, there was only one decisive game among those top four. So who won the candidate spot was decided, and this is basically always the case in the candidates tournament, usually the case, largely, is decided by who manages to beat the heck out of somebody in the bottom part of that eight-player tournament. You know, it's decided by Nepo 2-0-ing Faruja or Rapport or somebody like that, you know? And then because of that, Nepo finishes ahead of, you know, Fabi or whoever, who's only able to draw two games against him and can't quite break through. So when you see the top four players in this tournament and see their results and see that their tournament was basically decided only by their play against Abbasov and Faruja, their relative scores against those two guys, then I think it doesn't refute what you said about classical chess being exciting, because it was exciting. But I think it still does present that there is still this underlying issue that when the really good players are in really good form and they play each other, it's going to be fun and exciting to you, me, and Kostya, because we can be excited and entertained by a great draw. But it has some competitive issues and mass fan issues when there are just no decisive games.
Well, I think that brings up a fourth reason I think this is a watershed moment, because how did Nepo killed himself? He made that easy draw against Prague. Or he tried to make the easy draw. He made the easy, very easy draw against Fabi. And especially that draw with Fabi, that's reminiscent of the reason why you might hate classical chess. And what happened? Nepo, you lost it, buddy. That was your chance. Gukesh wasn't playing. He was playing win all. Now, let me just back up a second if you don't know what I'm saying. There was an old Soviet take that in any tournament, you kind of save your energy, pick out ahead of the tournament who you want to beat and who you want to draw to. And that's what Nepo did. He may have had his marks, and it worked in previous tournaments. The guy had qualified a bunch of times. We thought it was inevitable because the strategy was working so well. But it didn't work anymore. It didn't work, and he got burned. Fantastic for chess. Fantastic.
But it didn't work because, you know, Gukesh or Naka or Fabi beat him in one of the later rounds and passed him. No, it didn't work because they managed to beat somebody in the bottom of the field that he'd drawn with.
Well, I don't know if that's so true. I mean, Fabi, yeah, he was like 95% winning that game against Nepo. I mean, he really should have won it.
But didn't.
He didn't win it. It wasn't because Nepo like played the Petrov and killed the game. I mean, he didn't win it because chess is difficult, you know?
Yeah. Because chess is difficult. Because the winning margin is kind of narrow, right? Like there's all this drawing margin, and then you have to have like this much more advantage than to be in the winning zone. It's very difficult.
I see we all have our biases. Jesse wants Magnus to come back. David wants Fischer random.
I honestly think that what's interesting for Magnus now is like this was like the firm end of the Magnus era. And what I mean by that is like chess was a certain way up to this point. And now Magnus is an old, in regards to this, what's happening now, he's an older dude. Could he still come back and fight? Of course he could. But it's like a new era, and he's going to be recognizing it now. It's going to be like, oh, I'm an old man now, and I have to fight to keep up with these kids. And it's not just like, oh, now I can sit back and say, oh, obviously I'm better than Ding. No, you're not obviously better than Gukesh, my friend. So it's no longer the case. I called you world champion for a couple of years now, buddy, because Ding wasn't it. But now, dude, if Gukesh wins, no, my friend, it's over for you. So this generation, it's like it's going to come to a clash. And maybe even if he's too proud to, you know, go through the candidates process, maybe then there'll be like a Gukesh-Magnus match, dude.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think this is likely. I mean, I don't know, but Magnus and Hikaru were going to do a match late last year. I think that's still going to happen at some point. And if Gukesh wins the match, I think a match with Carlsen would be really exciting. And I'm sure they'd come to some kind of hybrid format, like mix of classical and rapid and so on. I do feel like Magnus still has it. But I'm with you. I hope this kind of rejuvenates him and inspires him to come back and try to take out all the young whippersnappers.
Yeah, there's a lot of them snapping about. Now, I wonder, like right now, these young guys, one thing that's really different is that they're fighting every game, right? They're optimistic. Mm-hmm. They believe in themselves. Like, do you see Gukesh not taking draws, not backing down, not like looking for simple continuations? He's like as bad as me, except he gets away with it because he's a million times better. But like in terms of the decision making, he's like, he's ticking down, he doesn't see a way to win, he's like running down his clock, and then he avoids the repetition anyway, you know? It's just like, and I watch it and I'm like, I've lost like 1,000 games doing this.
Yeah,
you know. And Prague, very confident, you know, goes for it every time. Eric Geisy, Abdusarov, these guys have no fear. But I wonder if like 5-10 years down the road, the structure of the economy and the chess world, if that doesn't change, might lead to them just sort of settling in the way other elite players have, you know? Like the guys who now show up to all these round robins and make a bunch of draws and collect their paycheck, I mean, they looked like lions 10 years ago, didn't they? Weren't they full of confidence? They hadn't yet been held to 10 draws in a row by other good players. They still thought they could win games and that it was worth the effort.
I think they raised the standard, especially with Magnus. If I remember correctly, we used to have super tournaments with just like draws agreed on move 14. Like it wasn't even a repetition. It was just like draw agreed, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that has just gone away. They're no longer agreeing to a draw in a position where it's not somewhat forced. So I think we could have
a real cultural shift, not just like right now they're young and later they'll be old and do the same thing.
And also, I'm with Kostya. Yeah. Like you give credit to Magnus for that, man. That guy previously some boring looking end game. Oh, people would make a draw right away. It's almost a sign of disrespect not to give a draw. Magnus changed that, dude. He just played and he beat you most of the time too. That totally changed. And these Indian kids grew up seeing that. That's all they know.
Mm-hmm. So Magnus kind of set a tone for them of just put in the moves.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, he don't play. He played H6. Played H6 against Abatsov, man, and made that thing work.
Well, he also had that A6, H6 thing against Vidit, which was a brilliant game.
Yeah, the B4 against Naka. I was like, oh, this kid's crazy, man.
That B4 move, Jesse, we were just electrified. Even Magnus was electrified. Did you see that?
Dude.
Magnus was like, oh my gosh, I've never seen this idea before.
Yeah, that was a very interesting moment. And also, like, credit to David and Eugene. So I think both of them were skeptical of Gukesh's play and then changed their eval on B4. And then I was watching the Magnus commentary, and he had like the exact same. When Gukesh took on D4, Magnus was like, oh, I don't like this at all. Like, I'm really worried for Gukesh now. And then when he saw B4, he was just like, oh, wow, very impressive.
Yeah.
So once again, you know, our coverage was closer to the human point of view. I mean, like, closer to Magnus's opinion than the eval bar was. There was also this like rook d1 move in the position that some folks in our chat were suggesting, like, oh, maybe rook d1 is a move. They asked Magnus about rook d1. He was like, I don't see the point.
Yeah.
Once again, the eval bar just like leads people down inhuman lines. And
and they're like, rook d1 winning a tempo. It's like, you're not winning a tempo. You're spending a move to develop your rook and delaying your recapture for one move, you know, and it's not making any threats. So black can just spend their tempo developing their pieces.
Okay, I want to go back to Jesse's point about how the Indians are coming and just say, like, oh my god. I mean, like, Gukesh, I feel like is a result of like the Anand boom. Like, it's like just like the matter of years since then. But now with Gukesh winning, that's just going to inspire like another new generation. Because I mean, it's just such an incredible story. So like, India is just going to be the new like chess superpower now. It's just like inevitable.
Right.
Just taking over like Russia's spot from some years ago.
Yeah. Can I be annoying again?
Uh-oh.
Yes, the Indians are coming, but there's always somebody coming. So, yes, the Indians are coming. They're going to be a superpower for several years or several decades. You know, there's a huge population, and so the number of talents to find is immense. And, you know, Vichy is responsible. Yes, it's a boom, right? But there's always somebody coming for you. And I talked to some like super underrated Indian at the last tournament I played, the Sunway Sikkis tournament. He said, dude, the Uzbekis are much more underrated than the Indians. Like, if Indians play with Uzbekis, we give away all our rating points to them. Okay. And the Uzbekis are coming for the Indians. Once the Indians have come for everybody else, and somebody will come for the Uzbekis after that too.
No, so, that's true.
So Nodirbek, obviously everybody knows he could be like a top player. But I mean, you saw his whole team of like their whole teenage team at the Olympiad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like the Indian team. So they're coming like crazy, and they're going to inspire other people too. But it's now chess is also has an international element, right? Like, we get these national stories, the Fischer boom, the Vichy boom. But, you know, I think people in different countries can be inspired by somebody somewhere else. You know, like, you could have like five teenagers somewhere in Iran who are looking at some Dubov games, and they form like a chess team. And then next thing you know, it's like the Iranians, you know? So, and that's not a random example, because Iran also has like a huge, like, surge of strong teenagers. So the Indians are coming, but that's not the end of the story. That's all I want to say to that.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, Uzbekistan, like, I saw tons of players from Kazakhstan. Iran, I think, has a number of talents. Turkey spreads now.
Pops up here and there.
Yeah. And it only takes one, like, Magnus type of kid to really change everything for a country. But right now, India is looking hot. I mean, geez Louise, they are way. I mean, oh man, how many young Gukeshes are out there right now just devouring chess? Scary.
Yeah, dude.
And really, folks, we're running out of time. If you're an adult improver, oh my god, we're running out of time. They're coming for us. Oh boy.
Have you been checking your biological clock lately, Kostya?
Biological clock.
Feeling it.
Feeling it, yeah.
Feeling it. Let's see. Okay, I feel like we should quickly review our predictions for this event.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know who had Gukesh highest. I had him, I think, fifth.
We had him universally at sixth, all three of us. We were consistent on that.
Oh, yeah. We all put him sixth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
And we kind of were having the prejudice of age, right? It was like 17, too young. You know, he'll be there soon, but too young. So and that's
we,
why
he's
so low.
We put Prague fifth. Well, I mean, some of us, I think, Jesse, you had Prague
high. I put Prague high. Yeah, I put Prague high. And my big failing was I put Ali Reza at two.
Yeah.
Wow.
I put him at three, and Kostya got him right at seven.
Dude, I nailed Perugia, I'm sorry to say. I didn't want my prediction to be correct, but going into it, I just liked everyone else more than Perugia, okay, with the exception of Nija. Just everyone else looked better to me.
Yeah.
I think I was a little bit optimistic on Vidit. I put him fourth. Sixth was probably the better choice, looking back on it now. And actually, I do regret not putting Nepo higher. Thinking about how the tournament, I feel like it should have been either him and Fabi as the two clear favorites, I think, or maybe him, Fabi, and Naka. Some people were definitely picking Gukesh, but I would say going into it, it was very much a surprise, right? How he ended up.
Huge surprise. One of the biggest surprises in chess history, Kostya. I mean, he got like 1% of chess.com's poll of who was likely to win. So that poll put him in seventh place.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we even put him at sixth place, you know, but it's just a huge surprise. And, it's not because we didn't – I don't think it's because any of us didn't think he was good. I just thought odds were it was going to be a few more months before he hit this level. You know, I thought he was just going to, like, miss for this cycle, unfortunately. His next surge was going to be a few months later this year. Just, like, unfortunately for Noderbeck and Eric Icy, they hit surges right after the qualification for the candidates was set, and they weren't able to get into the candidates. If they'd gotten in, they would have made a mess, those two. It would have been bodies, more bodies.
We got Abasov right, though. We nailed that one.
Yeah. Gotta focus on what you get right.
Focus on the wins, man.
Yeah.
Did you recently get mated? Well, it's time to join the Chess Dojo training program. Or maybe you just enjoy this fine content. Give us some money on the Patreon. I need to keep the lights on. And with inflation, it's really hard for Kostya to be buying that avocado toast.
We have a couple good questions from chat along the way that maybe you guys could address. Because I've heard Jesse a couple times say, like, this is Naka's last chance. He's old. He better, like, not regret this later. He better focus on it and care. Yep. I think you may have also said it was Vidit's last chance when I said that Vidit was at the peak of his was not yet at the peak of his career, that he was still improving. You said, but you're not getting back into the candidates, dog. Right. This is your only chance.
Yeah.
And also, you know, maybe Fabi's last chance. So what do you think, Jesse? Like, how many of these people have seen, like, their last candidates? Like, of the people who didn't quite make it, is there anybody who's got a chance in 2 years to go for the world championship?
Yeah, very few. I mean, first of all, the story of Naka in the last couple of years and how he did so well, very surprising. I'm still struggling to even understand how it happened. That could continue, but he would be 38 when that goes down. Mm-hmm. Fabi is only going to be 33. So I think we can expect to see Fabi and Naka back. Nepo's going to be 35. I'm going to say probably not. Who are we going to see? We're going to see Abdu. We're going to see Gukesh. We're going to see Eric Geisy. Right. And then we got all these other kids. Prague, I think Prague is going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, then we have all kinds of other kids that are on the rise and could make it. You know, Keimer could make it. Could Duda return? Your favorite boss. Maybe he could come back.
You think that Hikaru at 38 will have another run in him?
Maybe. I'm going to say probably not.
Probably not. Okay.
Probably not.
And so of the guys there, it's basic of the older guys, it's Fabi who can stay at this level.
I think so. And I really do believe when I said the wave, like it's not just a wave of new players, but it's like a leveling up of the game. Like the game is different. It's stronger now. It's more competitive than it used to be. So it's not just like we have this cool young talent. No, this young new talent is marshaling a kind of chess that the old timers are going to struggle to get behind. And that's why I think even though Magnus Carlsen is probably the GOAT, this new generation could swallow him, dude. It could easily happen already that they could swallow him. So, you know, and would he win now? Probably. But I'm saying, Magnus, buddy, get back in the ring, boss. You got to stay fresh because these kids are coming. The wave is so strong. Imagine one of those huge ocean waves, dude. It's coming. And I don't know if you've ever been taken under by a wave and hit the ground. Bam! It really hurts, dude. It feels like you're going through a washing machine, man.
It actually felt like my back was going to bend the wrong way and snap in half.
That's right, dude. That's what it feels like, Magnus.
Yeah, I agree with Jesse. There's going to be a lot of kids. I think of the veterans, I could definitely see Fabi being back there. I would say, man, again, with the Nepo, I feel like for me, Nepo would be a more likely candidate than Hikaru. Just because Hikaru says all the stuff about being a streamer and maybe he's not going to want to expend the energy next time to try and qualify. I mean, he has to, you know, he has to go to the World Cup, Grand Swiss, these events, like he might not want to do that again. I don't know. Yeah, one name that Jesse didn't mention in his list of juniors was Faruja. Faruja could also come back.
Yeah, Faruja, definitely come back.
I saw an inspirational Instagram post from him indicating that he will learn from this and try to improve. I would love to see that happen. I mean, he's still, like, he's kind of been stagnant for a little while now. But if he has another surge, then who knows? Maybe we'll see the, you know, the final adaptation.
Faruja was like number 2 in the world, and now he's number 16. 16. Yeah. It's rough, dude. Yeah. It's really rough.
Wei Yi also stagnated for what felt like 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly at Tata Steel, he's back and surged up to top 10 in the world. He'd never been as high as number 2, right? But, you know, he'd been like 27-40 or so, dropped down to 27-10, and now he's back up. So there is time when you start that young to surge back up and still be young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he was very much hyped. But this new generation is super, super promising. Man, exciting. But I don't know. I still feel like, you know, the veterans, they're... We see veterans winning events all the time. So I imagine that's not yet done. And like guys like, okay, Fabi, I think Levon even, I feel like we'll have some left. Nepo, I mean... I don't know.
Dude, I love Levon. Levon doesn't have a chance, dude. No. Over Levon. I love the guy, but it's
He just won the American Cup.
Yeah.
By drawing classical games, right? And then winning some rapid games.
I don't know. Look, I just
And there were no Indian teenagers in the American Cup, importantly. No Uzbeki or Indian teens allowed.
And let me just throw out a couple more names I can well imagine being there. Keimer, I can imagine being there. I know David doesn't like him, but, you know, I think the kid, Michal, definitely, Sindorov, Sadwani, all these kids, dude, maybe even Mishra, who is now 15, be 17. At 17, auspicious age, my young friend, at the time of the next turn or next go around, you know?
Yeah. When you're 36, 2 years doesn't seem like that long, right? Like if you're Fabi at 33 or Naka at 36 or something like that, you're like, I could keep things together for another 1 or 2 years. It's not that much time. But when you're 15 years old and you're Mishra, 2 years is a lot of time.
Yeah,
dude, he's like rushing forward.
And Hans too. Journey to world champion, you know, any day now.
Hans doesn't have it, dude. I'm sorry.
Any day now. Yeah. Jesse, he won Granke Chess Open while he had like kidney stones or something. He had like a hospital level emergency and he like won the tournament.
Yeah. It's just The problem is, Coast, he's like amazing, but you just never know if it's real or not anymore. So,
yeah,
you know, but, it's just so hard to. It's, I mean, how do you ever trust again, right?
Well, he's also below 2,700 still, so it's, you know, we need to at least make 2,700 before we start talking about
it. He'll surge.
So I think there's room for max two old guys in the next. I mean, old guys, they're all younger than me, right? But mm-hmm. max two of the current current mm-hmm. generation.
And one of them will be Ding.
Right? So Ding might automatically be given a spot, honestly. And that basically leaves Fabi. And then Naka and Nepo, like, they're great. And they were half a point from qualifying here. But there's just, I don't know, there's just not that much room, right? There's only eight spots.
By the way, I think someone threw this out there. It's not, I mean, is it conceivable that Ding will retire? I think it's very possible. I would even say there's a small chance this world championship match with Gukesh doesn't even go down. And then they have to do a playoff for real to figure out who gets to play Gukesh for the world championship. Yeah. That thing is a huge possibility, but things are so weird with Ding that you never know. You never know.
Yeah. I agree. So I was kind of thinking, you know, Fabi plus, you know, either Naka or Nepo could make it to the next one. And I think it's, again, one of those things where it's just like chances. I don't think one of them obviously has more staying power than the other or a higher chess level. It's just a roll of the dice in the end, right? Like, why is Anish not in this candidates or why is Wesley not in this candidates? It's just a roll of the dice at the end with one game here or there for who qualifies.
No, it's a little bit better than that. You can make it by rating or you can win one of these qualifying tournaments. You know, Anish, buddy, you got your chance.
But I'm saying it comes down to a very small margin, right? So you couldn't say that, like, if you thought that Naka was going to qualify, you couldn't say that his chance was 90% and Nepo's was 10. It would be like 55-45 or 60-40 or something like that. That's what I'm saying. It's very close.
I would put it this way. If you are in the top 10 in the world, top 5, your chances are amazing to get into it. If you're in the top 10, it's less, but you have good chances. After that, it's going to be hard, dude. Like, Geary is 15 in the world right now. 9, he's 29. You could get in, but there it's just a roll of the dice. You know, definitely less than 30% chance he's going to make the next candidate.
It is super competitive. But I believe in the old guard. Class is permanent.
Well, there's a new class in town, my friend.
Yeah,
there's a higher class entering. I think it's a very small chance Ding doesn't play the match. I think it's more than zero, but he already said something about how he's looking forward to playing Gukesh. But if he does, for whatever reason, give up the spot, if that does end up happening, it'd be cool to see a playoff with, like, Nepo, Naka, and Fabi. Or maybe they should just offer the spot to Magnus. Be like, Magnus, do you want it? Do you want to play Gukesh for the world championship?
Yeah.
I think that wouldn't be fair to the candidates, but FIDE, I think, has done similar things before. It wouldn't be totally, totally outside the realm of possibility. But I don't see that happening. I think Ding will play.
We'll see. I'm looking at his recent history. He's just played so little the last several years. Yeah. Okay, cool. That was a great tournament, you guys. That was good.
Yeah. Man. Awesome.
Great candidates. 10 out of 10. Until next time, folks.